Imagine walking into your human resources department to dispute, a minor write-up.
Right, you're bracing yourself for a really stressful meeting.
Exactly. You figure the absolute worst-case scenario is getting fired from this specific company if things just go completely sideways.
Which is bad enough on its own.
Right. But instead, someone in that HR office quietly clicks a drop-down menu on their computer screen, selects a specific category, and you are instantly and permanently banned from ever working in your entire profession again, nationwide.
Wow.
Yeah, there's no judge, no jury, no formal hearing. Your entire career is just vaporized by a single checkbox on a departure form.
I mean, it sounds incredibly dystopian, like something straight out of a science fiction novel about bureaucratic control, right?
Totally.
But it is actually a very real functional trapdoor in our current legal system. It happens because administratively, we tend to conflate two vastly different concepts, losing a local job and losing your professional existence entirely.
Well, welcome to the deep dive. We are exploring a massive legal and procedural blind spot today.
And this really applies to everyone.
It does. If you're listening to this and you work in healthcare, corporate finance, teaching, or law enforcement, our mission today is unpacking exactly why New York's police certification system requires urgent reform.
Because everyone universally agrees that police accountability is absolutely crucial.
Oh, without a doubt. But the material we are diving into reveals how a local, potentially biased firing can secretly trigger a national professional blacklist.
So we are anchoring today's discussion on this fascinating legal analysis titled When Separation Becomes Civil Disqualification. It was written in August of 2026 by civil rights attorney Eric Sanders from the Sanders Firm.
A really dense but eye-opening read.
Yeah, and the core tension he lays out in this brief is the massive legal chasm between a local employer saying, you can't work in this precinct anymore, and the state government stepping in to declare, you can never work in this profession again anywhere in the country.
Okay, let's unpack this. The fundamental flaw identified in the brief is treating a local employment termination as identical to statewide professional extinction.
Right, they're just not the same thing.
To put this in perspective for you, imagine getting fired from a delivery job because you were late a few times. Your manager's fed up, they let you go.
Sure, which makes total sense. You didn't meet the job requirements.
Exactly. But as a direct, automatic result of that specific firing, the state government just permanently revokes your driver's license. So you can never drive a vehicle anywhere again for the rest of your life.
That is wild, but that is the exact scale of what the source says is happening here with police certificates.
It's just such a massive escalation.
That analogy perfectly captures the disproportionate nature of the punishment. A police department's decision to fire someone is entirely based on their own specific operational needs, right? Like their internal culture and their local rules.
Like maybe violating a procedural rule regarding how paperwork is filed?
Exactly. Or maybe they clash with a supervisor, leading to insubordination charges. Those are absolutely valid reasons for a local police chief to say, hey, this individual is no longer a fit for our specific department.
Right. But they shouldn't necessarily be banned from being a cop in the next county over.
Right. But New York's system blurs the line between that localized employment decision and the statewide credential that allows someone to be an officer in the first place.
Which really begs the question of why the system was designed this way to begin with. I mean, surely the state didn't just set out to create a retaliation machine.
No, definitely not.
I would assume this stems from trying to solve the, what is it called, the wandering officer problem.
Yeah, the wandering officer problem.
Right. The idea that a bad cop gets fired in one town and just drives 10 miles down the road to get hired by another department.
That is precisely the origin. The intent behind tracking police separations was actually very noble. The public demanded, rightfully so, that officers with histories of severe misconduct couldn't just precinct hop to escape accountability.
Makes total sense.
So to solve that, when an officer is separated from an agency under certain classifications, New York's Division of Criminal Justice Services, the DCJS doesn't just file that information away in a state cabinet.
What do they do with it?
They transmit this decertification status to the National Decertification Index, or the NDI.
Okay, and the NDI is a national database that prospective law enforcement employers across the country are heavily encouraged, or I think even mandated, to check before hiring a new recruit.
Correct. So the original goal was transparency. But according to the brief, the execution is where it completely falls apart.
Because it's automatic.
Yes. By tying the state certification directly and automatically to the local employer's classification of the firing, An administrative dispute with one local boss is instantly transformed into a national professional blacklist.
Wow.
The state basically outsourced the power of professional execution to local managers.
That seems like just a massive oversight, because if a local firing triggers a national ban, how exactly does the paperwork even go through?
It's surprisingly simple, which is the scary part.
Like, I'm trying to picture the mechanics here. Is there an independent review board that looks at the local chief's decision before sending it to the national index?
No.
Is there a trial before your career is legally vaporized?
There is zero upfront independent review. None. The speed and unilateral nature of this process is what the Sanders brief highlights as just terrifying.
Well, how does it actually happen?
Under New York Executive Law Section 845 and specific regulations like Part 6056, the local employing agency simply fills out a notification form when an officer leaves.
Okay. Just standard HR paperwork.
Right. They have to categorize the separation. And if the local administrator just clicks the box for removal for cause, that single characterization can immediately invalidate the officer's basic training certificate.
Instantly. No hearing before the state revokes the license.
Exactly. Just a box checked by a former boss who, you know, might hold a grudge.
And this actually brings us to a 2025 case highlighted in the source, matter of Ferretti v. New York State Division of Criminal Justice Services.
Oh, this case is incredible.
It perfectly illustrates how easily this bureaucratic machinery can be weaponized against an individual.
The Ferretti case is an absolute masterclass in bureaucratic overreach. To give you the background, Ferretti was an officer who faced a disciplinary issue.
Okay.
But he didn't run from it. He resolved it through a consent award.
Let's define that quickly for anyone unfamiliar. A consent award is essentially a negotiated settlement, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Both sides agree to a specific penalty to resolve a dispute without going through a full, drawn-out trial or formal hearing.
That is a perfect summary. Both parties agree on the facts and the punishment. In Ferretti's case, part of that consent award was serving a 120-day suspension.
Which is a pretty significant chunk of time.
It is. He served his time, took his punishment, and after those 120 days, he was officially returned to full duty by his department.
So he went back to work as a police officer?
He did, but sometime later, he decided to resign from the department.
Just a standard resignation.
Well, when he submitted his resignation, his police chief retroactively reported his departure to the state DCJS, not as a standard voluntary resignation, but as a for-cause separation.
Wait, why?
The chief claimed the resignation was somehow connected to those old, already resolved allegations from before his suspension.
You're kidding. So because the chief checked that specific for-cause box on the departure paperwork, Ferretti's basic training certificate was immediately invalidated by the state.
He didn't do it right.
His entire career was canceled over an issue he had already served a suspension for.
Exactly. And the state agency, DCJS, received that paperwork and just rubber-stamped it.
Did he try to fight it?
Oh, absolutely. When Ferretti challenged this immediate decertification, he brought receipts. He provided concrete documentary evidence attendance records, payroll data.
Basically showing he was clearly back on the job.
Yes. Showing he had clearly returned to duty after his suspension and worked for a period before resigning.
So he proved the chief's characterization of his departure was factually incorrect.
He proved it beyond a shadow of a doubt to the state agency. But DCJS upheld the chief's classification anyway.
Unbelievable.
They deferred entirely to the local employer's paperwork over the objective reality of the payroll records. Ferretti had to spend immense time and money taking this all the way to the appellate court.
And the Third Department Appellate Court had to step in and finally annul the state's decision, legally labeling it as arbitrary and capricious.
What's fascinating here is the sequence of events.
Right.
The system invalidates the license first and makes the officer fight through the court system to prove their innocence afterward.
Which takes years and thousands of dollars.
Exactly. The state isn't acting as a neutral judge weighing evidence before stripping a credential. It's acting as an automatic amplifier for whatever narrative the local agency wants to push.
It is a literal guilty until proven innocent model applied to someone's livelihood.
That's exactly what the brief argued.
So, if this is how New York treats a police officer's certification, basically revoking it on the whim of a local chief without any prior hearing, how do they handle other post-employment benefits? Like, let's talk about pensions, because the source material draws a wild contrast here.
Oh, the brief refers to this as a stark legal paradox. New York has a very specific, rigorous law for taking away a public official's accrued pension, known as Retirement and Social Security Law, Section 157.
Okay.
If the state wants to touch an officer's pension, they face a massive legal hurdle. First, you need a felony conviction or a qualifying plea that is directly related to their public office.
Wait, really? So a minor administrative violation wouldn't even qualify for a pension review?
Not at all. And even with a felony, it's not automatic.
What else do they have to do?
The government has to prove its case to revoke the pension with clear and convincing evidence. There is a formal, mandatory hearing. A Supreme Court judge has to weigh multiple complex factors.
Like what kind of factors?
Things like the proportionality of the punishment, the officer's entire criminal history, and their years of good service before the misconduct occurred.
Okay, I have to push back here.
Go for it.
Because if you're listening to this, you might be thinking the exact same thing I am. A pension is just money. It's a financial asset. An officer with a badge has the power of life, liberty, and the legal use of lethal force.
Ew.
If they do something bad enough to get fired, shouldn't we want it to be incredibly easy to permanently ban them from the streets? Why should the standard for taking their badge be as impossibly high as taking away the retirement funds?
That is the most common and completely understandable reaction to this issue. And the source addresses this tension directly by separating the concepts of disclosure and discretion.
Okay, break that down for me.
Preserving an officer's certificate does not hide their misconduct, and it absolutely does not force any other police department to hire them. This is the crucial distinction.
I see.
If an officer gets fired for non-criminal misconduct, their full, truthful disciplinary record is still preserved and available. Any future employer conducting a background check will see that record.
So if a department in the next town over looks at their file, they see the write-ups, they see the firing, and they can make their own call.
Precisely. They can look at the file and say, no thanks, you are too much of a liability for our community. The bad behavior isn't hidden,
right?
But permanent decertification steals the discretion of those future employers to ever make an individualized judgment.
It takes the choice away completely.
Exactly. Imagine an officer made a serious procedural mistake 20 years ago, served a suspension, got retrained, and has had an exemplary record ever since. Permanent decertification mandates that rehabilitation is legally impossible.
That's a great point.
A badge absolutely requires public trust, but stripping someone of their entire profession for life should require the same basic due process as taking their money. It shouldn't be an administrative reflex based on a local boss's mood.
Well, if the standard for ruining a career is really this low, and it lacks any upfront judicial oversight, then it just leaves the door wide open for local chiefs, sheriffs, and administrators to abuse that power.
Sadly, yes.
Which naturally leads to the question, who is most vulnerable to this kind of unchecked bureaucratic power?
Historically, and according to current legal practice, post-separation administrative decisions are rarely neutral.
How so?
When a manager is filling out departure paperwork for an employee they just fired, that process can easily be infected by discrimination, retaliation, or institutional animus. We tend to view HR forms and separation notices as boring, objective paperwork.
Right, just checking boxes.
But they are tools of immense power, especially when they dictate your future employability.
And the brief provides an incredibly chilling example of this with a 2025 federal case, Peros v. County of Nassau. This case really pulls back the curtain on how administrative processes can be used for targeted retaliation.
Yeah, the Peros case involved former correction officers who were seeking what are known in New York as good guy letters upon their retirement.
Good guy letters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For anyone outside of law enforcement, a good guy letter is a post-separation credential that retired officers need to obtain a retired pistol permit.
Okay.
But beyond just the permit, it's heavily tied to their reputation and honor in the law enforcement community. It's a signal that you served faithfully and left in good standing.
But the sheriff at the time, Michael Spazzato, started systematically denying these letters to a very specific group of people, disability retirees.
Just targeting them specifically?
Right. If you put in your 20 years and retired normally, you got your letter. If you were injured on the job and had to take a disability retirement, the sheriff suddenly withheld this crucial credential.
And the sheriff claimed this was a purely administrative decision. He argued it was based on legitimate concerns about whether disabled officers could meet firearms qualification standards.
I mean, it sounded like a neutral, policy-driven choice on paper.
On paper, sure. But when a federal court actually looked at the evidence and the internal communications, they found that his supposedly administrative rule was entirely pretextual. It was just a smokescreen.
So what was the real reason?
The policy was actually driven by deep-seated animus against disabled officers.
The court recognized the immense reputational harm this caused to the officers, too. One officer's testimony noted that being denied that letter felt equivalent to receiving a dishonorable discharge after years of putting their life on the line.
Which is devastating. And this connects directly to the broader civil rights danger we are discussing. The source ties this bureaucratic retaliation to Title VII of the Civil Rights Act and a landmark Supreme Court case called Robinson v. Shell Oil Co.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Let's make sure we define those terms.
Go for it.
Title VII is the bedrock federal law that protects employees from workplace discrimination based on race, color, religion, sex, and national origin. It's the law that makes it illegal to fire someone just because of their demographics.
That's right. And in the Robinson case, an employee had filed a formal discrimination charge with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the EEOC, against his employer.
Okay.
He ended up leaving the company. Later, when he applied for a new job elsewhere, his former employer gave him an intentionally terrible negative reference, specifically as payback for filing that EEOC charge.
Let me guess. The employer's argument was probably something like, he doesn't work here anymore, so we can't be sued for workplace retaliation.
That was exactly their argument.
Of course it was.
But the Supreme Court ruled that Title VII protects former employees, too. The court reasoned that if employers could ruin your future career prospects as payback for reporting discrimination, the entire civil rights framework would just collapse.
Because nobody would ever come forward.
Exactly. No one would ever blow the whistle on illegal behavior if they knew their former boss could legally blackball them in their industry forever.
If you follow that logic and apply it to the New York police certification system, the implications are absolutely terrifying.
Oh, they really are.
Imagine an officer who witnesses severe racial discrimination within their precinct or experiences sexual harassment from a supervisor. They decide to blow the whistle. The local agency might realize they can't fire this officer loudly without drawing a massive lawsuit.
So instead of a loud firing, they make life difficult until the officer resigns, or they find a minor infraction to pin on them. And then when filling out the state departure paperwork, they just quietly click the removal for cause box.
And suddenly, that whistleblower's career is ended statewide, entirely in the shadows. The local agency successfully retaliated, and the state's automatic decertification system did all their dirty work for them.
This creates a massive chilling effect. The system, as currently designed, actively deters officers from speaking up about corruption or discrimination.
Because the stakes are just too high.
Right. If you know your boss holds the unchecked power to not just terminate your current employment, but to instantly decertify you nationally with a single form, the risk of reporting unconstitutional behavior becomes unimaginably high.
That makes total sense.
The potential for a local employer to magnify their retaliation through the state's automatic machinery is the core issue Eric Sanders is highlighting here.
We have painted a pretty grim picture here. We have an immediate draconian punishment mechanism. It is easily manipulated by biased or vindictive local actors, and there is essentially zero upfront state oversight to stop it before a career is destroyed.
It's a broken system.
So, what is the fix? How does the legal brief suggest we actually repair this broken machinery?
The brief outlines a very clear, actionable blueprint for urgent reform. The first and arguably most vital step is flipping the presumption of decertification.
What does it mean in practice?
Well, under the current framework, the default rule is that a local for-cause firing automatically equals professional decertification. The reform argues that the default rule must be continued certification.
Meaning the burden of proof completely shifts. It shouldn't be on the officer to prove they deserve to keep their license. It should be on the employer to prove why the license should be taken away.
That is the cornerstone of due process. If a local police department believes an officer is so dangerous that they need to be permanently decertified, the employer must bear the burden of proof.
Make them do the work.
Right. They should have to initiate an independent administrative proceeding, present clear and convincing evidence to a neutral party, and prove why that specific individual poses such a threat that they must be permanently exiled from the entire profession.
And the standard for that kind of professional exile needs to be significantly raised to match the severity of the punishment, right?
Yes. The brief argues that the standard for permanent exile should generally mirror the pension laws. So, a felony conviction related to public office.
That makes a lot of sense.
If the misconduct falls below that level, say, a serious administrative violation or a localized dispute, the state should require a heightened evidentiary showing from the department.
Meaning they can't just check a box.
Exactly. The department would need to prove that temporary suspensions, mandatory retraining, or monitored probation are insufficient. Permanent exclusion should be the absolute last resort, proven necessary by the government, not the automatic first step.
There is also a systemic fix the source brings up that I found brilliant. Mandatory civil rights audits. The brief suggests modeling these audits after the Federal Uniform Guidelines on Employee Selection Procedures, or UGESP.
Yes. If we connect this to the bigger picture, this addresses the invisible bias embedded in the system. Right now, the state only sees individual, isolated cases.
Like one officer gets decertified in Buffalo, another gets decertified in Albany.
Right. But the state agency, DCJS, needs to look at the aggregate data.
Think of it like a credit card company auditing for fraudulent transactions. They aren't just looking at one $5 charge at a gas station. They're looking for patterns across thousands of transactions to see if a specific vendor is compromised.
That maps perfectly to what DCJS needs to do. We need to know if a specific police department is disproportionately checking that removal for cause box for black officers compared to white officers.
Exactly. Or women.
Right. Or if women or individuals who recently filed equal employment opportunity complaints are suddenly facing decertification at higher rates than their peers.
Because that would indicate a systemic issue.
Definitely. DCJS must act as an active, data-driven regulator of fairness. They cannot continue to just be a passive warehouse, unquestioningly accepting whatever data local chiefs send them.
Yeah.
If a department is consistently handing out permanent professional extinction to marginalized groups while letting others quietly resign for the exact same offenses, the state needs to catch that pattern and stop it.
So what does this all mean? Whether you work in law enforcement or you are sitting in a cubicle doing corporate finance or managing a team in a hospital, this deep dive is really a masterclass in how invisible bureaucratic processes can bypass the justice system entirely.
It really is.
Checking a box on a departure form shouldn't have the power to destroy a career without due process. We all want strict accountability for bad actors in positions of power. But accountability without due process isn't justice. It's just administrative exile.
And that leads to a final, somewhat unsettling thought from the source material that you really should mull over.
Well, let's hear it.
The brief points out that in 2021, New York quietly expanded the legal definition of removal for cause. It used to strictly cover officers who resigned while a formal disciplinary trial was already pending.
Okay.
But they broadened the legislative language to include resigning in connection with allegations.
Which is incredibly vague. Yeah. In connection with could mean almost anything a manager wants it to mean.
It gives local employers massive unchecked leeway to interpret and define career-ending terms. And if state agencies can unilaterally expand the definitions of these terms without a judge's oversight, what is stopping other state licensing boards from doing the exact same thing?
Oh, wow.
From nursing boards to teaching certifications to accounting licenses, what is stopping those regulatory bodies from quietly rewriting the rules? They could easily create systems that bypass judicial scrutiny and permanently ban people from their livelihoods based purely on a local employer's unproven allegations.
It really makes you look at that standard HR departure form differently, doesn't it? That invisible career-ending button isn't just a threat in police precincts. The architecture for it exists or could easily be implemented in almost every regulated industry. Keep questioning the systems operating in the background of your own profession. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive.